Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex podcaster, and I only really want to fuck people who I could have like a 3 hour long hysterical laughing conversation with. Like, what's the point otherwise, you know? Who are you, friend?
I'm Billy Laura. I'm a sex educator and porn maker, and I've had a lot of crushes in my time, man.
My life is just a tapestry of crushes.
Yeah, really is.
Every crush is just a handhold on the ladder of life for me. That's really how it feels sometimes.
Do you ever place a memory in time by associating it with like
the crush you were era dating that you were
and
in.
Or crushing on at that time?
Oh, literally, yes, all the time.
I was really hung up on this person at that point. So, like, that means it must have been between this year and this year, I think.
Yeah. And, it's so often, like, I'll look back and be like, wait, why was I doing that weird thing? And I go, oh, yeah, because I was really into this person who was into that weird thing. That checks out.
Right. Someone cute said it was a good idea, and I went, sounds like a good idea. Can I go do it?
You know, I actually unironically like wrote a piece about this recently for my newsletter, katesloan.email, if you want to sign up, about like how I really do feel like my crushes guide me to what's next in life on my path.
Like, yeah, I similarly have noticed that like I am often attracted to people who have an overabundance of something I feel like I need more of in my life, which feels like a correlation to that.
Exactly. It's like, why am I into this person right now? There are so many other people in the world and in my life who are smart, funny, etc. What is it about this person that's drawing me to them right now? And it's usually not something I'm entirely conscious of. Mm-hmm. And it usually leads me down a very interesting path. But anyway, that is not the path that we are going down in this episode. We are doing part two of an episode about when one person in a friendship develops romantic or sexy feelings for the other and how to handle that. And something that occurred to me as I was editing last week's episode is we talked about that for like an hour and we never used the phrase friend zoned. And I feel like we have to talk about it. I know that it's like not really as much of a buzzword as it was a decade ago, but you know, it's very relevant to this discussion. Do you think friend zoning is a thing? What's your take on this? I guess I should define, in case you haven't heard this term, anybody listening, usually when somebody says that they got friend zoned, it means that the other person put them in this zone mentally where they're just friends and they can't break out of it. And there used to be like pickup artistry guides on how to break out of the friend zone, which basically just means like how to build someone's attraction for you. But I don't know. What do you think of the friend zone framing?
Okay, this may feel like a leap, but bear with me, because I think I feel about the word friend zone the same way I do about blue balls.
Interesting.
Okay, yeah.
Similar frustration present in both concepts.
True. And also, like, so what I mean by that is that, like, is it uncomfortable to get, like, really turned on and not come and get edged a bunch of times? Sure. Is that unpleasant? Absolutely. Like, can that actually be physically uncomfortable sometimes? For sure. Fine. I haven't squirted in this new house. It's been 6-8 weeks or something, and my body feels it. My body fucking knows.
My jaw just dropped when you said
I know. You look genuinely shocked. Listen, depression makes me forget sex exists. But my G-spot has not. Anyway, and then every time I do come, I'm like, I'm not making a mess here. I haven't even figured out. I didn't even unpack the blanket yet, the waterproof blanket. Anyway.
I think it's been weeks since I've taken my pants off to jerk off.
Moving's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Such a vibe, though.
So real. Yeah.
Anyway, all of those things are true. And the phrase blue balls is pretty much only used to hang over some usually woman's head about how you did this to me. How dare you do this to me? What the fuck? Like, you're hurting
me. It's your fault. It's your responsibility.
I deserve this other thing that you're not giving me. Mm-hmm. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Right? And friend zone, I feel similarly in that, like, yeah, it's possible for some. I did talk about this last week, that it's possible to just like, oh, it didn't fucking occur to me to think about being interested in fucking you. I don't you know? Mm-hmm. Didn't know you were interested, expressing interest, I'll consider it, whatever, right? And that feels akin to a friend zone, right? It's also entirely possible to deliberately decide, another thing I talked about last week, I think, that, like, this person's going to stay a friend, either because making them more than a friend would hurt both of our feelings in some sort of way, or just, I'm not interested in doing more than that, and I'm kind of aware that they might be, and I very deliberately expressing that they are my friend, right? Mm-hmm. All of those things feel like they are describing what we assume to be the friend zone, or what we accept to be the friend zone, right? Mm-hmm. And those are all valid things, and those can all really get you in your feels, and they exist in the world. And also, it's not a thing women are doing to men, because this is often a gendered phrase. It's not a thing anyone is doing to someone, and no one is entitled to a relationship with you, and you're not, like, deliberately hurting someone by doing it, right? And I feel like that's when the word friend zone is used, even though all of those other things exist, but I think the word friend zone just reduces them down to a combative heterosexual idea of dating, where everything else is just kind of like, oh yeah, humans relate to each other in different ways and feel about each other different ways, and sometimes that's compatible and sometimes it isn't.
It really is so astonishing how often heterosexual dating dynamics could be described as combative or adversarial. Honestly. Like it's a fucking zero-sum game. Both people can't get what they want in a situation. Like, it's absurd, but
you're competing with each other, you're competing with everyone else on the dating market,
that sucks.
Weird vibes.
Hate it. But I agree with everything you said, like,
someone could write a thesis in there about capitalism. Anyway, keep going.
I think you're so right that, like, friend zoning is emotional blue balls in more ways than one. Mm-hmm. I do think it is often used in this cudgel-like way to punish women for not having romantic or sexual feelings. Mm-hmm. I have often heard it paired with accusations of being too picky, being too shallow. As if the men saying these things don't have standards for physical appearance of their sexual partners. Like, fuck off with that shit. What are you talking about?
Right. And also as if liking someone can just easily be rounded up in any number of ways. You seem to like spending some time with me, so clearly you want to spend all time with me and put my dick in your mouth. I don't understand the difference. I don't. Like, yes, you do, bitch. Yeah. Yes, you do. You feel differently about different people. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, the thing that has really bothered me about the idea of friend zoning is the idea that a friend of mine who I think is really my actual friend, who we have been supportive for each other, we have been there for each other, actually was just sort of laying in wait, secretly hoping. And the thing is, like, I do think that there's a spectrum there. I don't think it's a binary of, like, you only want to be their friend versus, like, you have these evil intentions that are, like, corrupted, you know, because, like, as we were saying last episode, sometimes you do have sexy romantic feelings for a friend and it's chill and you're not being fucking weird about it and you are their actual friend. Yeah. But for me, the thing that bugs me about it is the implication and often the reality that, like, if you're not interested or available for romance or sex with this person, that a friendship would be a consolation prize for them and not one that they'd particularly be excited to have.
Yeah. And that's the thing about, like, the phrase friend zone, it inherently implies that that's a thing that you're trying to get out of, that it is an obstacle, that it is a bad place to be. Mm-hmm. And really doesn't create a framework for enjoying a friendship and enjoying a relationship of the kind you can have with this person. And I think we talked about last week how there are some relationships where you're just, or this might have been a conversation I was having with just a friend about one of their relationships. I don't even know. But there is fucking hell. Did I say that with a microphone in front of me? Who knows?
Who knows? I have that question all the time.
But, like, there are certainly some people where you're like, oh, no, there's not a friendship here. Either that would suck too much for me, or, like, that's actually not where my interest in this human really is. Like, without the romantic or sexual component, I don't. But in other situations, like, there is something to be said for enjoying the relationship that you can have. Presumably you like a lot of things about this person. You would like spending time with them, even in platonic ways. And there's something to be said for enjoying that. And the times in which the word friend zone comes up are not times that really encourage that enjoyment of the relationship. It is just, how do I make this friendship stop? Which is weird place to be coming out of friendship from.
It's so backwards to how I think about relationships and attraction for myself, because it completely devalues the possibility that attraction could build from a strong bedrock of a friendship, as we've been discussing, and that can be really sexy, actually. That can be like hot, to get to know someone gradually on these deeper levels and then get to the sex or romance layer. And another thing that you sometimes hear in these discussions is the sort of flip side of the idea of the friend zone, which is the idea of being put in the fuck zone. Often women will talk about this, that a man who they thought was their friend had actually put them in the fuck zone. And like, it's a retaliatory framing for sure. Like another classic like heterosexual adversarial thing. But I do think that that makes more sense to me, because I tend to put most people in kind of the friend category just by default. And other layers are more rare. And yeah, I've definitely experienced like discomfort from having been clearly put in somebody's fuck zone when I didn't really want to be there. I hate this term. I hate this idea. I think it sucks.
That totally makes sense. As someone who has made a lot of porn and has a lot of friendships in like the kink and sex communities and things. So a lot of my friendships often start with, hey, we are at a kink event. Do you want to do one of these naked things together that we mutually enjoy? You said fuck zone, and my brain was like, ah, yeah, those times where you're like, wow, we fucked several times. I have no idea what kind of attracted to me you are. Do you just like, is this like friend fucking? Is this like sexy fuck? Is that
right?
We've done kink things. Do we want to do sex things? Do we want to? But no, that's a very different thing. But I've also been on the other side of that, where I am like, oh no, we mutually do the sex stuff, but we actually deconstruct relationships to the extent that hasn't quite as meaningful as we thought it was.
It is kind of funny. I have had queer relationships especially like that, where like you start in the fuck zone and then you slowly make your way into the friend zone while still being in the fuck zone. Like,
right.
I don't know. The friend zone doesn't have to be something you're trying to get out of. Something can be something you're trying to get into. Also, what you just said reminded me that I'm like working on my romance novel still, and I'm having this like internal crisis about the fact that, like, just plot wise, I think it's gonna make more sense that they do their first spanking scene together before they even kiss. And I'm like, is that weird? But I've done that multiple times in my life. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And then you do get the fun tension of like, we've done this incredibly intimate thing, but we haven't kissed. Is kissing more intimate, or is the fact that you've like groped and spanked my ass mean I have permission to just kiss you? That would be a normal, I could kiss you if I wanted to kiss you, right? I don't. And I've absolutely been in that situation multiple times, both in and out of scenes, where I'm like, oh, your whole dick's been in my mouth, but I don't know if I'm allowed to kiss your face right now. Anyway, weird lives that we lead.
That actually plays nicely into a question that I had about kind of like social and cultural expectations regarding developing feelings within a friendship, because I do think that the hetero framings of this are very different from the queer framings of this. Like, there's this discourse about like men and women can't be friends with each other because there's always going to be attraction there. I'm like, first of all, often people don't even say straight when they say that. Like, they're just assuming that everyone is straight. Like, I assure you, my gay male friends can have friendships with women just fine. Like, you can have a friendship and have there be attraction there. That doesn't have to, like, ruin the friendship. And then, like, conversely, there's this thing where, like, I think a lot of queers are better at, like, staying friends with exes or with people who they've had some kind of like entanglement with in the past, but sometimes there can be.
There's only so many of us.
Right. Yeah. Like, so, yeah, you run into like small world problems sometimes where like you might not even feel emotionally ready or able to stay friends with somebody, but you kind of have to because you're like so closely in community with each other. I don't know. Do you have thoughts on like how this manifests differently for straights versus queers?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is another instance where being queer and in my instance, the queers that I hang out with, and specifically queers, not gay cis folks.
Right.
Though sometimes them, but like the queers that are often also polyamorous and or queer and or polyamorous and or kinky or et cetera, are used to deconstructing things and used to looking at things in, you know, looking at things for what they are rather than how they fit into the pre-existing scripts that we've been working off of, because we learned a long time ago those scripts don't always work. Though admittedly, sometimes they sneak in there and like, I'm like, I have to do a thing this way, I have to do it that. Oh, that's a fucking, how'd you get in here? But anyway, so you still find them and discover shit where you're like, wow, I could just not do things that way. And I think that makes queers more equipped to work with a feeling and figure out what to do with it. I think queers are more experienced and have more existing scripts, frankly, from seeing other relationships around them for fucking your friends and staying friends with exes and having relationships that are more complicated and nuanced than friend or partner. Whereas I think straight folks have scripts for what to do when someone falls for a friend, right? But they all kind of suck.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got like the rom-coms that end happily ever after where the path is be a fucking creep for a while and they'll come around. And I think women are basically told just like be hot at them and it'll work. Just go get a makeover or whatever and suddenly show up fully like the hottest version of yourself or whatever the fuck.
I really wish that more dating advice aimed at women had anything to do with the non-physical. Because it's like part of how you become a very dateable, sexy, interesting, appealing person, I think, to people across the gender spectrum, I think, is like have an interesting life, know a lot of things, you know, have consumed some cultural stuff, like whatever. Like to me, this is like
have interesting stories to tell.
Right.
Interesting like, experiences you can take them to or give to them.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I can do cute eyeliner or whatever, but like that fades literally.
Right. But and the idea that they like all the superficial stuff aside, the idea is almost that like, ah, no, you just have to like we talked about like the friend zone thing earlier, like present yourself as a sexual being in front of them and men will just want to fuck you. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And like, what the fuck does that tell women who like do that to a dude who just isn't into that? Because men actually also have preferences. Men don't just want to have sex with everything all the time. Like,
you're so right.
And so that just puts those women in, oh, did I not hot enough? Am I not capable of hotting hot enough? Right? Like,
it really is another layer of like shame to contend with around rejection. And like, I'm not saying that, like, I know that there's like other different layers that like men and mask folks also have to deal with in a different way. But like, the times that I've been rejected by a straight man, especially one who, like, by all accounts is, like, horny and, like, into women, even though I know in my heart of hearts, like, attraction is very subjective and people don't have to be in me.
People don't have to be in you. I know. I mean, I guess. I prefer, like, you know.
People don't have to be into me or in me, consent. But there is this voice in my head, as you're saying, that's like, but men are supposed to be into all women all the time, right? So like, what the fuck's wrong with me? I must be some fucking hideous ass monster. Like, I really have internalized that too many times and it's not great. And I know that those men probably also struggled with giving those rejections because of similar narratives in their head.
Yeah. Whether out of fear of like implicitly communicating that or out of fear of what's wrong with me, there is a hot woman in front of me who is into me. And I'm just like, nah, I don't know. I'm just, and like, you know, I'm supposed to want all sex all the time with all women. What do I do with that? Like, it's not a great narrative on either side.
Yeah.
And it feels shitty for everyone involved. Mm-hmm. But those are the narratives that are out there that are given to straight folks or happily ever after somehow. and that's about it. So I think like straight folks really are considerably less equipped for dealing with something like this because it is, you know, maybe not particularly far on the spectrum of non-traditional relationships, but it certainly is. And depending on how you want to do it, can be a relationship style that is somewhat too significantly outside of the norm for a lot of people.
Mm. Yeah. Having dated in queer land and in straight land, one major difference that comes to mind for me is in my experience, anecdotally, et cetera, not all men, a lot of straight men have worse impulse control around stuff like, or I don't even know if impulse control is the right phrase because they're making the decision, right? It's not like they are out of control when they say sexually harassy things to their friend. They're making the decision to do that. Whereas my queer friends, I feel like we could be good at managing our own feelings. And sometimes that's a good thing because then you can just like be more normal around your friend who doesn't want to be with you and that's fine.
I also think damn near all queer people, and that's a hard sentence for me to get out, frankly, because you know, we're a vast group, have been pursued by cis men at some point. You know?
So a lot of us are like, you know how I'm going to do it? Not like that. That's so true.
Exactly. Like, and it is poor impulse control, and it is the script that they are fucking given. It is the only thing that they are told is successful. It is the thing that they are told that will eventually get rewarded.
Persistence.
Right. The thing that they are told if she doesn't appreciate it, she's a frigid cunt. You know what I mean? Like,
I love being a frigid cunt. Love
right.
It.
You know? So these are the tools that they have. And if they are not someone who has reflected at all on any of that, they are just pulling from the lowest hanging apples off the tree and going with what they got. And straight men haven't been pursued by that many other cis men in their life. So they haven't had the opportunity to be like, oh, this is gross. It's just bad. I don't want to.
It's such like, an interesting point. But like, I think sometimes when I've raised this point with men, they like still don't really understand because in their mind, it's like, well, if I was offered sex, I would take it. Like, of course, like, I don't really get why you are like not only saying no to sex from people who are pursuing you, but like put off and grossed out by the pursuit sometimes. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, if you hadn't been subjected to that in bad ways continually throughout your life, then yeah. It makes sense that you wouldn't realize how that can suck.
Right. And because this same script doesn't give women a ton of opportunities to pursue straight men, right?
Yes. Oh, my God.
And when they do, it is this whole sexy trope. Like, it is this whole, either you are, you know, all the way back to, like, the femme fatale, right? A whole different type of woman that is
It's either sexualized or it's like totally the opposite where there's like these tropey like women who don't realize how socially out of touch and unattractive they are and are perceived as like being sexually forward and like gross and unattractive for being so. I've written before about how I think that like, you know, it makes sense that those media models exist because there are people of all genders who pursue people in ways that are creepy and unwanted, of course.
Yeah. Men have been a problem for a real long time. I think we need to also start having a conversation about how women can be problems.
Yeah.
Like, you are not exempt from also being threatening and making people real uncomfortable and being over the top by just consistently pursuing. But unfortunately, that is what all of our fucking rom-coms have told you.
Yeah. I remember the first time I got an unsolicited vulva pic in my DMs. I was like, oh,
nope.
Rare.
Yeah.
Still don't want it. Still don't do it.
Nope. Okay.
Moving on. I wanted to try to give some advice on healthy ways to process unrequited feelings that you're feeling within a friendship, hopefully without damaging the friendship. Sometimes this happens because you've talked to the person and gotten a hard no. Sometimes you've just sort of gotten the vibe that nothing's going to happen, which you're probably right about that, as we were discussing last week, because usually you would have noticed some positive signs if somebody was into it. And there's so many ways to do this, but I don't know. How would you recommend processing these feelings on your own, or at least without involving the person who you have the feelings for, without damaging that relationship?
Yeah, I think my first instinct is to refrain from indulging them, right? It's real easy for crush or NRE feelings to just kind of become the backing track of my mind for whatever length of time I am particularly smitten, right? They become a focal point of daydreams, or they just like we were talking about earlier, they recommended this thing. I should also check out this thing. Mm-hmm. I like them. I wonder if I like this. I avoid those opportunities at least for a little while, right? Like, if they say, hey, want to come watch this movie with me? Yeah, sure, whatever. If they say, hey, I really enjoyed this movie, I don't need to remember that and go find it and go watch it or something. Like, it's okay.
I mean, I do, but I won't.
Right. Because that's the thing. I don't need to pour another 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours when I go between going to find it and thinking about watching it later and then maybe texting someone about it or whatever, you know, like,
yeah,
all of that ambient time and energy and thought into the idea of how smitten I am with this person. I'll need to do that. I don't need to reinforce those neural pathways, right? Because we decided we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. So let's not do that, right? Like, if things pop up that are really glaringly, blatantly, like, oh, this is extremely their shit. I send it to them. Yeah, just, you know, you're not going to never think about them. They're your friend. Let's try and get that ratio back down to where the rest of the friends are, though, I think is probably the first step.
Mm-hmm.
And don't just not think about a thing. That's fucking impossible. Find other things to replace that energy with, right? Find something else that you're really excited about learning about, or a new hobby that you're really interested in doing, or a new show that you're really loving, or book, or whatever. Like, some kind of story you want to get through. I don't know. And find another thing to ambiently daydream about, whatever that looks like for you. Find another place to put that mental and emotional energy. And maybe this is the ADHD talking, but I find things just kind of taper off when I do that. If I don't look at a thing frequently enough, it just kind of goes away. And yeah, I'll still see the person. Like, it's harder when you're still seeing and talking to the person, but consciously reminding myself, oh, this isn't a person I drop everything for. Oh, this isn't a person that I need to. I'll get to that in a minute. Oh, I don't actually need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It helps me recontextualize those interactions too, and just kind of wean myself away from having them be in special, sparkly, crushy human category, back down to where all the other people I adore are.
Yeah, yeah. I've sometimes, after a breakup, like, made a list in my journal of, like, reasons why we weren't good for each other. And I think that in this case, where it's, like, an unrequited thing in a friendship, you might not want to do that quite so hard, because, like, you don't want to start hating your friend, right? Like, you don't want to highlight things that you dislike about your friend. But I do think it can be helpful, and I've done this a few times in this situation, to make a list of, like, ways in which you two probably wouldn't be a good fit to be in a relationship. Or to have sex or whatever. Like, you know, I was in love with a vanilla man once. I had to repeatedly remind myself, like, it wouldn't even be good, babe. Like, what are you even doing? Like,
says the person who, 2 weeks ago was like, I think romance is inherent in my need for romantic relationships.
Yeah, literally. Well, I was, that's so funny. Therapy and how we've grown. But I was thinking about that so much ever since I said that on the recent episode. And I was thinking back on like all my most fervent romantic crushes in my life. And I truly think almost all of them started because the person was behaving in a way that I felt like was dominant toward me, whether or not they had any intention whatsoever of doing that. And this vanilla person who I'm talking about, I mean, you know him. He can be a little dommy in his manner, but, you know, get him in bed and it's like, kind of, not so much, but yeah. So there's definitely like stuff that would make you not suitable to be partners, and you can kind of think about that stuff. I also sometimes have found it helpful just to kind of change somebody's label in my mind. Like, I'm just like, I'm just going to stop calling that person my crush, or in some cases, my future husband. I don't know if you remember when I used to do that. That's so bad. Don't do that, tiny early 20s Kate. What are you doing?
We used to tell each other to marry people for anything, though, too. Just truly. Someone brought me this ice cream. You should marry them. I should.
Yeah, I don't know if we stopped doing that because I actually got married or because we grew up. So I stopped thinking of the person as my crush. Sometimes I'll sort of give them a more annoying label in my head, like that that dweeb who I like for some reason. Mm-hmm. you know, again, hopefully not mean because they are your friend.
It is helpful to be aware of their flaws, though.
Yeah.
Not in a nitpicky way, but in a taking off the rose-colored glasses of a crush.
Humanizing. Kind of way. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, okay, let me skip ahead to the end of NRE, even if we wound up dating. What part of them is going to annoy me when we're dating? We're not going to date. What part of them is, like, gonna be the bits of this friendship that I'm like, oh, right, you chew your food weird, or whatever stupid thing. Yeah. Oh, you're always gonna be 10 minutes late. That's fine. But it would drive me nuts if we were dating, you know, things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. You know what you shouldn't do, though, is if you're the person giving the rejection, you should not try to give these reasons. I've definitely had people do that where they're like, you don't even want me. Trust me. We would be such a bad pair. I'm such a bad partner. Here's why. And I'm like, this feels condescending. Like, I can make my own decision about like whether I think we would be suitable partners for each other. But if you're telling me you're not attracted to me, like that's the pertinent thing. Just say that. That's fine. Right. I definitely agree with your commentary about like re-channeling your obsessiveness. This is like the most important thing to me is like, yes, I'm thinking about them for a lot of time of my day. I need to find another thing to fill that hole. And they talk about this with addictions and dependencies too, like changing the cues, changing the habits. It's a very real thing. And ever since my latest instance of being rejected, I have written like 16,000 words on my romance novel. Like I really threw myself into it and I was like, I'm going to start on the part of the book where shit starts to hit the fan later on, because that's emotionally where I'm at right now with regards to romance in general. And it's made me so productive, and I'm in a headspace of thinking obsessively about my characters and about the story. And it's really been good for me.
I've even like created little fictional stories or worlds in my head that I don't do anything with, that I don't put anywhere, but they are for, I need to not think about anything that is happening in my life, and I need to daydream. So what I'm gonna daydream about is this little character that I created, and today I'm gonna think about what their childhood was like, or today I'm gonna think about what their house that they live in looks like, or what kind of clothes do they usually wear, or who's their best friend, or whatever about us. Like, you don't have to be a writer or a filmmaker or a storyteller or whatever to like have a little thing that you're building in your head, a little world that you know a lot about that like can take you away from whatever else you'd rather not spend that energy on, you know?
Yeah. And those creative outlets, sometimes they are kind of distraction, take your mind off it. And sometimes I find it helpful to kind of dive right into it, and I'll like write a song about what I'm feeling, or a short story or a poem or whatever. And that can be really helpful. I also think it's important to say, like, you're allowed to cry and be sad and grieve. I think sometimes like I would like stuff down my feelings and like feel guilty about crying or being upset. because I'm like, I should just be able to be chill and just be friends with my friend. Why am I being weird? And it's like, you're not being weird. You're by yourself in your room. You can cry if you want to. Right. Fucking do it. It's, you gotta like move the emotions through your body. I actually do think it's important. Even if you don't cry, I think you gotta do something physical. Go read Burnout by Emily Nagoski. Amelia Nagoski.
And well, because there is, like you briefly said, grieving, but I want to sit with that for a second, because we are like, depending on how much emotional energy you've put into this idea of having a crush on this person or potentially dating this person or whatever, like, you do need to grieve the idea of that potential relationship, and to whatever degree you've built that up. Like, I advise, don't put load-bearing structure on that until you've had some conversations. Again, like, it's the less you've built that up, the easier this is.
Yeah, easier said than done. I know we both know that, but...
However, there is a kind of loss and a kind of grief to, like, oh, that thing that I hoped for, that potential future isn't gonna happen, and it's, like, just definitely never gonna happen in the way that I imagined it, and, like, that kind of sucks. And frankly, to be perfectly clear, it's never going to happen exactly how you imagine it. Whether they're into you or not, it's never going to happen exactly how you imagined it.
Yeah.
But this version of grief obviously sucks in a different way than, like, finding out the exciting new ways it's going to be different from what you dreamt, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not disrespectful to the friendship you have to grieve the other kinds of relationships you might have had if that was a thing that you were, like, emotionally invested in.
Yeah. Just, you know, maybe don't do it in front of them.
Right, like, not with them.
Yeah. I've told a story here before about, like, when you and I went to a party that my then unrequited love was in attendance at, and I became so overwhelmed with emotion at some point that I had to step out and cry outside the front door. But, like, I did that because I was like, I'm not gonna fucking do this in front of him, not only because it's embarrassing, but also because it's just, like, unnecessarily hurtful and stressful to him. He already knows how I feel. He already knows that it sucks. I don't need to do that.
Yeah.
On that note, I also sometimes found it helpful to do, like, an actual, like, ritual of some kind where I sort of officially and finally decide to give up the ghost on it, like, to let it go in this way that feels a little bit witchy or magical or spiritual or significant in some way. Might be some journaling involved in that. If I have written a song about the person, I might play through that and cry while I'm doing it. Yeah, whatever you think is going to help you kind of close that chapter of your life mentally.
I think for a less magical but still significant and, like, no, I have decided that, like, intentional thing that you can do similarly. Like, I love the witchy shit too, but you can also... it might just be, like, taking a picture down that you kept up or whatever, or, you know,
or
changing their name in your phone.
That they dropped on your bedroom floor.
I was not going to invoke the dime. I was deeply thinking about the dime. I was not going to invoke the dime.
This is old Dildorik's lore. I wonder if anyone listening to this even remembers this story, that this man who I've been referencing, who I was in love with, like, the first time that we hooked up, like, a dime fell out of his pant pocket onto my bedroom floor. And I left it there for almost a year. And I wrote a song about it called 10 Cents. And I, every time I saw it on the floor, I was like, I should pick that up. And then I was like, but it makes me think of him, so I don't want to. And then you're totally right that, like, when I decided to give up on that and change his label in my head and try to move on, I picked up the dime. And I don't remember what I did with it. But I remember that being a really significant moment.
Because I remember talking to you about it and being like, no, we can put it somewhere, but not on the floor anymore. Because I don't think you, like, picked it up and got rid of it or spent it or something. Like,
yeah.
Or you might have spent it on something nice for yourself. I forget. I don't know. Not alone, but in addition with the
dime. Yeah, the song is like, what could I buy with 10 cents anyway?
But I don't know. It's just putting away a little reminder of this person. And again, just kind of taking them off of that slight crushy pedestal. Like, I don't know quite that I want to say pedestal, but, you know, that crushy category in your head.
Yeah. And I always view laughter as the best medicine for emotional pain of any kind. Like, I remember after one terrible breakup, I went out to see an improv show every night for a week with friends because I really needed to be out of the house and out of my head. primarily. Mm-hmm. And the endorphins are really good for you. I've sometimes found that to be good when, like, I know that maybe it would be helpful instead if I was to, like, masturbate and, like, get myself off and get endorphins that way. But my emotions and sexuality are so tied up in this recent rejection or whatever I've been mm-hmm. through that, like, that just doesn't feel within reach. And so laughs mm-hmm. are, like, a good substitute for that.
And we're often talking to polyamorous folks here, like, mm-hmm. sex with other people, partners that you know yeah. are super into you, or hookups, or friends with benefits, or whatever, like, going to someone else that you have an established relationship with and having an opportunity to feel desired and desirable is mm-hmm. really fucking great when you're like, I'm a little cretin that no one would ever want. And then you get to come home and your hot partner is like, I personally would like to fuck the shit out of you. If you know?
Yeah.
And I think planning an opportunity to feel like sexually desirable and or even romantically desirable can be really great for when you are kind of struggling with feeling the opposite of that, which I find is a side effect of rejection for me yeah. often.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that's all for this week. Thank you for joining us for this episode. I really hope that if a situation like this has happened to you recently or anytime, that you're feeling a little better now, because it fucking sucks. I'm sorry. I have really, really been there and it really sucks. I've been Kate Sloan. You can find me online at katesloan.com, which is also my Blue Sky username. My two books are 101 Kinky Things Even You Can Do and 200 Words to Help You Talk About Sexuality and Gender. I have one more musical improv show in Toronto at the time that this episode drops. You can come see me and my troupe on Sunday, June 29th at 7:30 at Comedy Bar East. The show is called Studio Sundays. Come see me do musical improv. Where's your stuff?
I'm Billy Lore. You can find all my porn and all the other things that I do over at BillyLore.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Billy Lore and at Billy Lore _. Together we're the Dildorks. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Dildorks and at thedildorks.com. But most importantly, if you go to patreon.com/thedildorks, you can toss a couple of bucks our way. And for $6 a month, you get access to our Patreon-only Discord. And at $12 a month, you get our Patreon-only bonus episodes.
Thank you so much to our top-tier Patreon supporters, Natalie, Todd, Amy, MB, Robin, and our most hated patron. Thank you also to Protodome, who did our theme song. Thank you to Addison Finch, who did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
The usage and the conversations around and in which the word friend zone shows up in, that was not a good sentence. Hang on. There's too many things. I was trying to figure out how to articulate it while just throwing words at it until the sentence hopefully came together. Or the girl who was, like, standing next to me, staring at me, being like, I love sucking cock. Wah, wah, wah. Just all the time. Just... And then, like, staring at me and being like, you know, how much time has been sucking cock? And I'm like, I have layers of news for you. You're very drunk, ma'am.